Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom liYehudim, shalom lebnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Shai Ben-Tikal, webcasting to you from the hill country of Judea, otherwise known throughout the world as the occupied Palestinian territories. And never mind that for two decades, no one in the world called these hills the occupied Palestinian territories. It's the second day, Parshas Mishpotim, Tafshin Ayin Ches 5778, the first day, Monday, 5 February 2018. The week in which we descend in our Torah readings from the glorious previous readings describing the amazing events leading up to and including the miraculous escape from Egypt, and then the speaking by God Almighty from the summit of Mount Sinai, giving us his digest of laws mistakenly called in English the Ten Commandments, when Ten Statements might be a better translation. We descend from the exaltation of those heights, emotional and intellectual, to the nitty-gritty of daily life, starting with labor management relations, the obligations of a servant to serve 6 years, but then goes free if he wants. It's this legislation that inspired the system of the indentured servant that brought so many settlers to the American colonies. A craftsman, for example, would pay for the transatlantic passage of a young man, give him his room and his board for 6 years, teach him his craft, and then after 6 years, the apprentice was free to go, having acquired a trade and paid off his debt by his labor. It's reckoned by some historians that a third of all the laws found in the charters of the 13 original colonies were drawn directly from Tanakh, the Jewish Bible. Other religious scripture contains valuable wisdom, philosophy, inspiration, but few contain the down-to-earth principles of society in all manner of situations, like the rights of a worker, or how to manage crops, how to slaughter animals, marriage and divorce laws, sexual propriety, torts, civil disputes over property and animals with neighbors. And so it's a tragedy when so many of today's Jews know nothing of the depth and scope, profundity and intelligence found in the Bible, the Mishnah, the Talmud. In the States, with more officially Jewish ignoramuses than in any other country, they are disappearing thanks to the blasphemous nonsense of so-called Reform Judaism, which rejects all of this teaching, one of whose rabbis is our focus in this podcast, the head of Rabbis for Human Rights, Arik Asherman, defender of the ancient Palestinians against us Islamophobic, racist, insulting humiliators. And we will get to him and the podcast after the following message from Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar, I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom liYehudim, shalom lebnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Shai Ben-Tikal, webcasting to you from the hill country of Judea, otherwise known throughout the world as the occupied Palestinian territories. And never mind that for two decades after World War II, no one in the world called these hills the occupied Palestinian territories. I mean, nobody used that term when the Hashemite invaders from the Arabian Peninsula ruled here in those decades. They only entered Palestine in the mid-1920s after they were driven out of Mecca by their rivals, the far more primitive Saudi family tribesmen. In 1921, Winston Churchill promised Eastern Palestine, as it was called, on the east side of the river, the West Bank, to the Hashemite clan, a term one never hears these days, East Bank, in order to keep Abdullah, brother of Faisal, from attacking Damascus, where the French had taken over. As my book makes perfectly clear with maps, what the British did was create a phony map of Palestine used by the League of Nations, and that was used to put one over on Abdullah by giving him 77% of that phony map, when the real maps of Palestine at the time of the Balfour Declaration, 1917, show the League of Nations map to be a fraud. Those are not the lines of Palestine, wildly inflated and expanded. And they got away with it because Abdullah, indeed all the Arabs, had absolutely no notion of Palestine in their heads. No Palestine played a role in their history and culture. It's never mentioned in the Quran, whose stories take place in what the Romans called Arabia Felix, as the Romans called the Arabian Peninsula. Neither does Jerusalem appear in the Quran. The Arabs had no idea what the outline of Palestine, its borders, were, and so they could be fooled, as they were. Right-wing Jews also are fooled by this League of Nations mandate map when they complain that the League gave them 77% of Palestine. This is not true. Only 15% of Jordan is classical Palestine, the land within 35 miles of the river, roughly speaking. Not that overall the Arabs were gypped. In fact, as my book shows, in the end, the Arabs were awarded 53% of the true classical map of Palestine and remain sovereign over it to this day. What has slipped down Orwell's memory hole device in his nightmare novel 1984 is that southern Lebanon today, southwestern Syria today, and the western part of Jordan are no less classical Palestine than the barren wasteland on which the Zionists started building Tel Aviv in 1909. In 1948, the Arab Legion, as it was called, the Jordanian army, without any sanction from the United Nations, crossed the Jordan River from the east bank to the west, drove up the mountains to Jerusalem, and drove out every Jew in the city. The Jordanians also captured the land around them, and not allotted around Jerusalem, not allotted to them, later known as the West Bank. And for the next two decades, there was not one resolution at the United Nations mentioning Palestinians, let alone the need for a state for this allegedly indigenous ancient nationality. In the 1950s, nobody on the planet thought that the Arabs on the Eastern Bank and those on the Western Bank belonged to two different nations. The Hashemite Jordanian king in Amman gave them all Jordanian citizenship, and when one of his subjects, living in 1968 in Los Angeles, assassinated presidential candidate Senator Robert Kennedy for supporting Israel, he was identified as a Jordanian immigrant. He's still in prison in California, Sirhan Sirhan. He came from a village a few kilometers from today's reborn Jewish community, a.k.a. settlement of Ofra, and the media continued to identify him for years as a Jordanian immigrant. Nobody thought to call him a Palestinian because he did not call himself that. And isn't it odd that Washington kings so far of the artificial state of Jordan, named not for a person or a people, but a river, because there's nothing Palestinian about the state of Jordan, isn't it odd that this family, ruling via the charisma of being direct descendants of Muhammad, that champion head chopper, never saw the Arabs in Judea and Samaria as belonging to a nation other than the Jordanian state, who were in need and had every right to their own nation state. But we Jews, since 1967, we are told to swallow, like a communion wafer, the current belief, against all evidence, in the existence of the ancient Palestinian people with the identical rights the Jews have to call this their ancient homeland and have their own nation-state just like the Jews. This is the successor false belief to the deicide charge of Catholics that they smeared us with until 1965, almost 2,000 years. In 1945, Allied forces drove through the gates and into Auschwitz. Anti-Semitism became associated, as never before, with the horror of those stacks of skeleton corpses and, of course, the smell, the stench of the decomposing bodies. That's the worst smell in the world, by the way. A decomposing body. And here were mounds of them. And alive still, these walking, staggering skeletons. When the world saw the newsreels, in an age when that is how many Americans got their news when they went to the movies once a week, henceforth, anti-Semitism became in public uncouth, precisely because it was now associated with those horrible scenes that everyone saw. So anti-Semitism, as was known for a century, became gauche. And for the next two decades, Israel was admired. In 1948, after the Arabs had rejected not one but two offers of a state west of the river, first the Peel Plan in 1937, and a decade later the Partition Plan at the UN of 1947, the armies of the six Arab states invaded the Jewish state approved by the UN General Assembly, and the whole world, watching, knew the fighting was not about creating a state for any Palestinians as we think of them today. The fighting was an attempt to overrun all the Jewish homes and businesses, towns and hospitals, factories the Jews had built over a century of restoration, bringing Eretz Yisrael back to habitability. It was a war of destruction, conquest, and looting, as they imagined, on the part of the Arabs. Everyone knew that. The fighting had nothing to do with a state for the Palestinians, as that term is used these days. As my book shows, from the League mandate of the 1920s to the 1960s, the official Arab position was that there was no such country as Palestine. In those decades, only the Jews were proud to call themselves Palestinians, short for Palestinian Jews. In fact, for the first decade after Israel's War of Independence, the Arab refugees from that war were called just that, the Arab refugees. Everybody called them that. They were not yet the Palestinian refugees. Not until an Arab League meeting led by Gamal Abdel Nasser in 1959 was the idea of rebranding these Arab refugees as the Al-Kiana Palestini in Arabic, the Palestinian entity, not even yet the Palestinian people. That was such a strange idea at the time to Arabs. After decades of denying there was such a country, let alone such a people, the Arabs never had a concept of Palestine as a distinct geography in the region, and certainly not one with a distinct nation living in it. It was all just an undistinguished part of Syria. So it makes perfect sense that the first UN resolution, using the language, the people of Palestine, General Assembly Resolution 2628 of 4 November 1970, 3 years after Israel dispossessed the Jordanians of Judea and Samaria. Indeed, in my 1969 Rand McNally Atlas, you see the area that Israel conquered in 1967 is marked, but its cartographers did not label it the West Bank. The old laborers were still in use, Judea and Samaria, the map shows. Indeed, in 1967, the New York Times referred to the western bank of the Jordan River, lowercase w, lowercase b, because the name West Bank, capital W, capital B, was not yet in common use as it is today. Even so, the very name West Bank is incriminating evidence of a historical hoax. Indigenous ancient Palestinian people living in these hills, ancient indigenous peoples, even modern people, give names to prominent natural features such as hills, mountains, lakes, rivers. West Bank is a no-name name, perfectly empty of any association to any historical personage or people or event in the phantom history of this hologram of a people. West Bank is proof that there was no Palestinian people, because to this day, these Arabs have no name for these hills. Well, you're listening to Phantom Nation, an internet radio podcast named for the book of the same name, available on Amazon. It exposes how this monstrous anti-Semitic lie of an ancient Palestinian people with rights identical to the rights of Jews to call this their ancient homeland, their right to a state on this very same real estate. As such, Palestinian nationalism goes beyond a national movement of resistance to Zionism, the Jewish national movement. At bottom, this competing, bogus claim, Palestinian nationalism, is a stabbing attack into the heart of the Jewish religion that emerged with Avraham, who in his first encounter with the Almighty is told, "Go to a land that I will show you." So, it is the second day. Parashas Mishpatim, Tashinayin, Ches 5778, the first day, Monday, 5 February 2018. And yesterday, Israel Hayom newspaper reported that the pro-Palestinian activist of Jewish extraction, who is called a Reform Rabbi, meaning a non-Jewish believer, because Reform Jews do not believe what Jews have believed for thousands of years. They don't believe that God gave the Torah to Moses on Mount Sinai. They teach and preach the anti-Semitic higher criticism concocted by anti-Semitic German academics in the 19th century when anti-Semitism was in full flower as an intellectual fashion in Germany when the Reform schismatic sect was born. Anyway, Israel Hayom reported this Reform Rabbi Arik Asherman, who heads a pro-Palestinian NGO called Rabbis for Human Rights, dispatched his attorney, Yair Nehorai, to the commanding officer of the IDF Central Command, General Roni Numa, to demand restrictions on the Purim parade in Hebron. Purim is almost upon us, and this was his second request. But again, General Numa said that he has no intention of imposing any restrictions on the public Purim celebrations in Hebron. Rabbi Asherman, as head of Rabbis for Human Rights, with a budget way over $1 million a year, provided by anti-Jews from abroad to bash Israel for our alleged abuse of the ancient Palestinian people, he complained in his letter of protest to the IDF that the parade is used to, quote, is used for, quote, incitement, humiliation, and insults against the Arab residents of the city, because, among other things, the marchers disguise themselves as grotesque Islamic characters, close quote. You get the picture? Like Halloween, people wear fright masks, and for sure, the Purim parade will feature a fright mask of that ugly Arafat and other Muslim murderers. And Rabbi Arik objects to this. Evidently, in his twisted mind, the Jews in Hebron have no right to mock the homicidal Jew-hating Muslims who murder us all the time. How dare they? Is this not evidence of their Islamophobia? In his letter to the IDF, Asherman said his esteemed human rights organization, quote, views severely the incitement being carried out in the name of the Jewish religion in the Purim parade in the heart of Hebron. In this conduct, the message is conveyed that the dignity, religion, belief, and property of the Palestinians is free, and all this is under the auspices and authority of the army, the sovereign in the area, close quote. And I say this is classic textbook anti-Semitism, which has commonly featured restrictions on Jewish speech. In Islam, a Jew in public angry at some Muslim for some insult or abuse who cursed the Islamic religion could be killed on the spot. Jews were not allowed to ridicule the Arabs and Muslims for being cruel, ugly barbarians. Rabbi Arik does not like that. Anti-Semitism in every generation can be described with three simple English words. Anti-Semitism is, quote, lying about Jews. From generation to generation, the content of the lies change, but the principle remains the same. People tell these whopping lies, and here is Asherman saying the Jews arrogate to themselves the right to Palestinian property that does not belong to them. And in this case, the Palestinians are the victims of Zionism. These Jews think they have the right to just take Palestinian property from them. His letter of complaint against the Purim celebration by the tiny Jewish community in Hebron continued, quote, there exists a suspicion of incitement to violence. Should anyone translate the offensive, despicable, and humiliating messages in the celebrations, which are acted out with the permission of the authorities, to mean that the blood, dignity, and property of the Palestinians are abandonable, negligible, and hence the real possibility of physical harm to them, close quote. You got that? The Jews are threatening violence against the Palestinians. In the mind of an Arik Asherman and other anti-Jew Jews, the Jews in Hebron pose a physical threat to their Palestinian neighbors, even though it's the Palestinians who periodically sneak into Jewish homes to stab girls to death in their beds, to burst in on a Jewish family enjoying their Erev Shabbat family dinner and stab them to death with a huge knife. In the mind of deranged anti-Jews like Arik Asherman, the Jews are the violent ones in this relationship, and the ancient Palestinians, they are innocent, passive victims who must be defended against their incitement. In other words, the Jews are forbidden to hate and express their hatred of those who murder them. What is also at work here is a behavior right out of the Middle Ages when Jews were so terrified of the Goyim. There were massive conversions, and even some who so identified with the homicidal Goyim and were terrified of them, they not only converted to Catholicism but became priests and specialized in spreading lies about what was in the Talmud, in which Jews, they affirmed, do give other Jews the right to murder non-Jews. It's in the Talmud, they said, these Meshumadim, these renegade converts who entered the Catholic priesthood. Purim is a forerunner, in a way, of the Holocaust, and being the wish to murder all the Jews in the Persian Empire at its peak. The Persians were bent on doing what the Nazis wanted to do, physically extinguish the life of every Jew in their world. But Purim is a celebration in which the tables were turned, and the Jews did not go like sheep to the slaughter, but fought and bested their would-be murderers, killing 75,000 of them. Victory is sweet, especially when good triumphs over evil. Purim is also similar in a way to the story of the Israelites in Egypt. That chapter in the history of the Jewish people begins with an Egyptian attempt to murder every Jewish newborn male in the country by drowning. And then after 210 years of Israelite life in Egypt, it ends with the Exodus and the drowning of Egyptians, their finest male soldiers. Then in Persia, 8 centuries later, on the brink of extermination, the Jewish people overcome the Jew haters. And ever since this date, Purim is a time for celebration, celebrating like crazy, which adds insult and humiliation to the defeated enemies. Listen again to what Arik Asherman said about the Jewish celebrations in Hebron. Quote, "There exists a suspicion of incitement to violence should anyone translate the offensive, despicable, and humiliating messages, which are acted out with permission of the authorities, to mean that the blood, dignity, and property of the Palestinians are not existent, and hence the real possibility of physical harm." A suspicion of incitement to violence. That's right, Rabbi Arik, that's right. The 1,000 permanent Jewish residents in Hebron with their many little children are threatening the 100,000 Arabs there with physical harm. These Jews may be plotting a pogrom among the poor, poor Palestinians. Asherman is just delusional. And notice how his delusion reflects the opposite of the truth, that it is the Jews who live in constant fear of homicidal Muslim maniacs. With a proven record of butchering Jews, it was in neighboring Kiryat Arba not so long ago that a bloodthirsty Arab with a knife crawled into the bedroom of a 13-year-old Jewish girl and stabbed her to death in her bed. These are the ones whose religion, not Judaism at Purim time, that licenses them to murder us, which is the reality Asherman will not see.
Ribbono shel olam, ata noten layam. Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Yes, indeedy. Rabbi Arik Asherman's principal value to the Jewish people may be his unwitting loss of Jewish identity, an adoption of the anti-Jew mindset, which is characteristic of Reform Jews in America like him. They have no serious Jewish identity when they side with the Jew killers, as they do, as he does. Listen again to this American Reform rabbi. Quote, "The Purim parade is being used as a platform for incitement, humiliation, and insults. The marchers disguise themselves as grotesque Islamic characters. In his mind, this is evidence of the racism of these Jews who ridicule the ancient Palestinians. From the mind of anti-Semites like him, Jews must not celebrate on this most joyous Jewish holiday." In the Jewish press coverage of this news item, their fine journalist David Israel did the work of contacting NGO Monitor for their information on Asherman's Rabbis for Human Rights, whose true name should be Rabbis for Human Rights for Palestinians Only, not the Jews. In the year 2016, this NGO, non-governmental organization, was the recipient of $1.625 million that came from a whole list of donors, starting with the arm of the Spanish government, from the European Union, the United Kingdom, an organization of German Catholics called Miserior. So many high-ranking Nazis were German Catholics. In Ireland as well, an outfit gives money. It's called Trocare. It's the official overseas development agency of the Catholic Church in the country of Ireland. This organization was founded in 1973 by the anti-Jew Pope Paul VI. Also on this list of donors to Arik Asherman is the national, I guess, official Norwegian church, a Dutch Protestant organization called Kirken something, a Dutch word I can't pronounce. Also the Church of Sweden gives money. The American Foundation for Middle East Peace gives money. Belgium's Catholic Caritas charity gives money. And, of course, the New Israel Fund. That's a nasty soulmate of an organization, along with the anti-Jew Jews in J Street. In other words, Arik Ascherman is a major anti-Jew hustler, and one can only imagine what he does with all that cash. Are his efforts really worth $1.6 million a year? What does he do with all this money when all we ever hear of him are these occasional passing media stunts? Truth be told, he's just another Jew boy in a class with the State Department peace processors, or the New York Times columnist LTF, Little Tommy Friedman. Ascherman is acting as a frontman for all these, in Yiddish, antisemiten, these Gentile anti-Jews, and Christian churches and charitable organizations in countries with a long record of religious anti-Jew persecution. But speaking of caritas, let's be charitable to Rabbi Arik. He could be tragically afflicted with a kind of hysteria, identity confusion. One speculates that Jews like Ascherman were at one point, as little boys, terrified, traumatized by anti-Jew bullies, which trauma they deal with to this very day by identifying with the bully. Ascherman is identified with the Arab aggressors. These Muslims here, whom he sees as the victims of violent Jews, instead of perceiving the reality of the relationship, which is the other way around. We Jews are now 6 million plus in this country, which is a strip of land averaging 50 miles across, from the beach of Tel Aviv to the Jordan River. All told, including Judea and Samaria, we are the size of Massachusetts, and are bordered on the west by the Mediterranean Sea, with a coastline of only 100 miles. And on the other three sides, there are 550 million, mostly Muslims, principally Arabs, Turks, and Iranians, whose religion is a form of Jew hatred. These officially Muslim states are far larger in landmass than the United States of America, yet in the minds of world anti-Jewry today, including Jewish anti-Jews like Mr. Ascherman, Israel is the bully, humiliating and oppressing the Arab Muslims. So Jews like Ascherman identify with the people who murder us all the time, people who refuse to respect our right to live free of their oppression and humiliation, two words which appear in the Quran when Muslims are commanded to oppress Jews, as they did for 14 centuries and continue to this very day. Islam cannot tolerate the existence of a Jewish state free of Muslim overlordship, so they accuse us of denying to the phantom Palestinians their right to a state free of Jews. In a way, our endless self-defense here is a function of the world telling lies that we tragically participate in creating. Every time a Jew uses the terms Palestinians and West Bank, they contribute to the endless abuse we are subjected to here and abroad. It's threatening to become a daily occurrence in Europe that Jewish children are beaten up in the streets and stabbed, slashed. And for sure, many of their attackers are Muslims who believe the Jews are Nazi-like oppressors and humiliators. Again, the very words appearing in the Quran, the very words used by so-called Rabbi Ascherman, because he is an assimilated Jew. Like all Reformed Jews, they assimilate. They take into themselves the views of Jews held by Gentile anti-Jews, who in every generation accuse us of nefarious schemes, evil desires, and crimes. On Friday, in the Bible of American Reformed Jews, the New York Times, two typical products of the IDF, dominated by the secular left, Ani Yatom and Amnon Oshet, opined against annexing Judea and Samaria, but what gave away their spiritual roots was citing in the lead paragraph President Trump's, quote, recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, but then in the very next paragraph rebuked the religious Knesset speaker Yudi Edelstein for declaring the other day, quote, that Israel will develop the whole of the country, including Judea and Samaria, and Yatom and Reshef wrote, referring to the biblical names for the entire West Bank, close quote. Got that? What the religious Jew calls Judea and Samaria, they call the West Bank. And they write this with no awareness of the confusion, contradiction, even hypocrisy on display. They think nothing of calling Jerusalem by its biblical name, Jerusalem, as they do, but then distance themselves from those who use the biblical names of Judea and Samaria, what they call the West Bank. Post-religious Israelis like these two object to using the biblical names of Judea and Samaria, but if so, they must be consistent. They refer without objection to the Golan, to Jaffa, Hebron, Bethlehem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Jericho, and so on and so forth, all of them biblical names. I think for the sake of consistency, intellectual honesty, they should forego using the term Jerusalem because it's too biblical. For too many post-religious Jews like them, and for sure for Arik Ashermen, they might be more comfortable no longer calling it Jerusalem, but Al-Quds. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Phantom Nation, available on Amazon for the next few weeks only, as a much cheaper paperback before it's replaced with a hardcover that will cost more. And if you are a regular listener to this podcast, it's the best way to express one's appreciation for it. Today's music was by Yehuda Glantz and Daniel Ahaviel, and we close, as always, with Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Bentekoa. צדיק אמיתי בעל הדרת פנים ואזכה שתזדכך חוכמתי בשלוש עשרה מידות שהתורה נדרשת בהן ועל ידי זה תזדכך כל רינתי ואכבד את השם מהוני ומגרוני מהונך מהונך כבד השם מהונך אל תקרא מהונך אלא מגרונך מגרונך, מגרונך, כבד השם מגרונך, 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 כבד השם מגרונך. כל רינתי ואכבד את השם מהוני ומגרוני מהונך מהונך כבד השם מהונך אל תקרא
This is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.